So, Chang.
Yes, my son.
I see that you came dressed as Father Guido Sarducci.
Yes, I did, my son.
In that case, Father, I came to confess.
Please, son, I want you to call me Sir before you go into your confession.
So, Sir Father?
Yes.
Okay. Well, okay. Sir Father, I came to confess.
Okay. Now, what are your sins, my son?
Sir Father, I cannot stop from making fun of Gen Z and the millennials. I just can't stop.
My son, that is terrible. My son, now for your penance, you will do three Hail Marys, four of Our Fathers, and blow me in the next.
Hey!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a thrilling episode of Back to the 80s Radio. Tonight, we're diving deep into the decade of decadence, where leg warmers and big hair, neon lights were all the rage. But amidst the neon glow and the pop music anthems, the 1980s also witnessed some of the most captivating and chilling crime stories in American history.
Lord have mercy.
As we transport you back to the era of Walkmans and Pac-Man, we're going to be exploring the gripping tales of notorious killers, daring heists, and courtroom dramas that held the nation spellbound. Join us as we unravel the mysteries and controversies and unforgettable moments that defined the true crime landscape of the 1980s.
I've seen the light.
What did you think of that, Reverend Chang?
Well, my brothers and sisters, you are all gathered here, the church of Back to the 80s, where we gather as one in unity to bring the word of the 80s back to you. We are going to dive in to a couple of songs. Something from a priest friend of mine. Somebody, please, I'm sinned. Call me a priest, Judas Priest. And I believe you're the devil's child. We're also going to take you into hell from a band called Black Sabbath. Many of you are afraid of Sabbath, with Ozzy and Dio. And this week's singer, Ian Gillan. And this next song goes out to all of you, you sinners, you spinners, and all you lotto winners. This is called Disturbing the Priest. You've been banged by Toscano and Chang here on the Gospel Hour's favorite podcast show of the 80s by Toscano and Chang. Now bow your heads and join me for a glass of wine and some Triscuits.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the one and only Back to the 80s Radio. Another day that we get to enjoy just you and us all by our lonesomes. Wherever you are, whoever you are around the world, thank you for joining us here in another episode of Back to the 80s Radio. In spite of what's unfolding throughout the world, there is a little moment, a little gap where we can laugh and smile together. Join me in welcoming a man who was not only the cause of many, many girls fainting back in the 1980s, not only because of his looks, of his reputation, but also because of his rage. Together, we call him the ever-wondrous Chang.
Oh, Toscano, my favorite Italian besides Chef Boyardee. The rage has been put in a cage. That's right. Fatherhood, grandparenthood has taught me to be a very mellow and wholesome man.
Oh, that's what it is.
And if you can believe that, then you could believe that Mickey Mouse is going to be the next president.
Oh.
After all, if we had Dumbo and we have the Invisible Man,
And we have the Black Panther as our former presidents. Then Mickey Mouse himself will be the next president. I called it right here.
You know, today, Chang, is an interesting show. Something we haven't touched on yet as a topic, but it's something that some people have been asking for. And it is a topic that, it's kind of bone-chilling, but it's kind of apropos because of it being October, being close to the time of Halloween. Today, we are going to be talking about crime and criminals of the 1980s.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's very fitting. Isn't it fitting that we dove into the show as sinners, or myself? My own character.
Which, by the way, I must congratulate you because it's hard to pull off a reverend and Bill Clinton all in one.
Well, I'll tell you right now, buddy, that is more impossible than somebody saving a dress with your DNA on it. As I told my good buddy, George, one day we're playing some golf, and I said, hey, George, I did not have sexual relations with my wife. And old Georgia boy looked at me and he says, I did. Where else can you get Bill Clinton and George W. Bush on the same show? Only right here in Tuscano.
So we're going to be talking about crime and criminals of the 1980s. I can recall a lot of these that we're going to be talking about today. Some of them from firsthand reports that I still remember today. And a lot of these just by kind of faint recollections. And that brings us to a very important thing. Before we get the show started, I do want to give you guys a shout out everywhere in the world that you may be listening. And so our hats off to everybody. Thank you for making Back to the 80s such a success.
I'm going to bring up one of the first crime cases and mention the individual's name. And this occurred back in 1980. And this, of course, occurred to my least favorite president, the attempted assassination of one Ronald Reagan, John Hinckley, who stated he was trying to capture the attention of one Jodie Foster that he was madly in love with by the attempt killing Ronald Reagan.
What was he trying to gain with this? Trying to get notoriety to be in a movie, or literally trying to get Jodie Foster's attention?
I guess maybe just some popularity, his name out there. So maybe Jodie Foster would have said, I think he's kind of hot.
Well, was he thinking that Jodie Foster was actually the character from Hannibal and then was going to go visit him in jail?
You know what? I don't know what he was thinking, because the funny thing is Jodie Foster is gay, so she wouldn't have had the hots for him, even if he would have went after maybe Walter Matthau or anybody else back in the 80s. Now, here's the funny
thing.
Very
true.
That son of a bitch is already out on jail, and he's making music on YouTube with his acoustic guitar.
Wait a second.
Yes.
Are
now,
you
this
serious?
Guy, I am very serious. Now the irony of it is he did fatally wound a bodyguard who later died several years later from the shot that he received as Mr. Hinckley was trying to gun down Mr. Bonzo. I mean, Mr. Ronald Reagan.
But that's interesting. That's interesting. So The whole thing happened on March 30th, 1981.
Correct.
So the president was leaving the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. He had been talking to, like, members of the AFL-CIO or something like that. But check this out. John Hinckley fired his .22 caliber revolver. Those are very small bullets. Granted, more people have been killed with a .22 caliber firearm than with any other round in history. But still, that amazes me that somebody died of that years later. Because Reagan, so here's what happened. One of the bullets, according to the news, right? One of the bullets ricocheted off of the limousine, and it struck him under the left armpit.
Yeah, so he had totally missed him. It was a bank shot. It's a good thing I was wearing my lucky suit and I had oiled my hair earlier that day. What did you think of President Reagan back then? Oh, wait a minute. You were a mere child. Sorry.
I was a mere child, so I can't tell you much. I can tell you what my, you know, what my dad used to say. If I'm not mistaken, I think my dad liked him. He didn't vote for him, but I think he liked him in a way. I know that a lot of people liked him for his policies and his and for what he did in certain cases for the economy and things like that. He allowed a lot of people to gain their legal status here in the United States, and that's as far as I know, or I knew back then. Different story. As you get older, you start studying about the presidents. But yeah, back then, I can't really say that one way or the other. I can tell you, though, he almost died from that. They didn't know he had been shot until he's on the ground. He starts coughing up blood.
I remember that incident. We were in school at the time, and we were in history class. And I believe one of my teachers made a comment about how disgusted he was with America and Americans. You know, that we had to live through assassinations. And again, we were witnessing another assassination on a great president. Remember the 80s? We had our share of our demons, my brother. Another story real quick. We had Richard Ramirez, which I can remember like the back of my hand because I lived it. He was in the areas that I resided in and grew up in and occasioned quite frequently. That was a very disturbing time with Richard Ramirez.
Now, this is one, the one that you just mentioned, I remember very well because it also happened. I happened to be living around the same areas. As a matter of fact, the day that he was caught, I was literally in Pico Rivera that day, that evening, as a matter of fact, when we got the news. But Richard Ramirez, otherwise known as the Night Stalker, right? He was also called in as he was also called the Walk-in Killer or the Valley Intruder. The guy would kill a lot of older people, a lot of older ladies. Sometimes he would tie up the older gentleman, and while he raped the, and when I say older, I mean women in their 80s. But he had some macabre interests in his early and mid teens, I guess. His older cousin, who also taught him some of the military skills that he would go on to during his long killing spree, also was a big influence and also cultivated a strong interest in Satanism and in the occult, by which he also gained popularity. Apparently, he had a strong drug addiction, and he used to listen to Ozzy singing that one infamous... I'm just reading the news. I'm just saying, one of the pieces in the news also made mention that he just happened to listen to Ozzy, the song called Mr. Crowley, because Mr. Crowley happened to be a leader in the Satanic Church, according to the stories.
Right.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
And he also listened to a lot of Judas Priest. The song The Ripper comes to mind. Now, you know me, I'm a metal guy.
Right.
But we cannot blame music 100% for our makeup of our mindset.
You are correct. No, but
it will contribute to a mood that you're in, but under no pretense is it going to make you a homicidal maniac or a murderer.
That is correct.
Because I listen to metal all through the majority of my young life, and I didn't feel the urge to rape and maim or bash or belittle or do anything heinous.
Right, right. I know, but I still had to mention it. Look, people sometimes that listen, that are killers, sometimes listen to classical music, and it wasn't the classical music that did it. So I get your point, and that's valid. I did want to mention, though, that his first murder on April 10th, 1984, he murdered a young Chinese-American girl, nine years old, in the basement of his apartment building. And then he went on to kill a 79-year-old, a 22-year-old, all backgrounds, okay? He wasn't making an exception in people. 44-year-old. So he killed all across the board, finally ending up in jail. And the guy was just out there. And I know he had a lot of enemies.
He also, I believe, kidnapped a child, a little girl. I don't believe he did anything to her. And I believe he took her back to the area, or maybe the area where she was at when he kidnapped her. But he didn't do anything to her. Now, here's something odd. I did some work. I don't want to mention the detective's name, but he is one of the major detectives that cracked the case and was there when he was arrested. I did some work for him back in the 90s when I was employed with the city of Montebello, which I had a lot of connections there because I was the maintenance man of the police department and the fire department and city hall, which I was based at. So I had a lot of verification to a lot of places. And I ended up meeting this individual, this police officer, who was a Latino, by the way. If that doesn't tell you who it is, then you know what? You need to watch the series on Netflix. But he told me some very horrendous acts that were not brought out about the case. Certain things that he did that were in the notes from the court proceedings, in the notes of the story of it, but some of the things that were not allowed to leak out into the media. One thing I remember he told me that was very startling when he told me that there was in one scenario, he carved the eyes out of one of the individuals of his victims and put them on a table or a nightstand, I believe. And he did that so they could watch what he was going to do to that individual's mate. So the dude was effed up, man. I mean, totally effed up. You know, the thing is, like, you know, he went to the barrio, tried to go to the barrio, and where did he end up losing it? The barrio.
So in 1985, on August 30th, he had gone to visit his brother in Tucson, Arizona. So he comes back, okay, on the 31st, and he happens to be, it's funny because he walked past police officers who were staking out the bus terminals in hopes of catching this killer. He walked right past them in East LA, okay?
Yes.
He went into a convenience store. And then he ended up fleeing into Boyle Heights down Hubbard Street, where he tried to take car keys from a woman.
Right. He tried to take the car.
The woman's husband got a fence post and struck him on the back of the head with it. And then about 10 people, I'm going to say some, I don't know if they were gangbangers or what, but they were at the 3700 block of Hubbard Street. They found Ramirez and they just beat the living heck out of him, where he was found severely beaten, unarmed, and they took him into custody there.
Yeah, now the officer I'm talking about had mentioned when police arrived, he admitted, "I'm the guy that you're looking for. Get me the fuck out of here before these people kill me."
Right.
Now, La Raza was in the casa that day, and that will just prove to anybody, doesn't matter who you are or how bad ass you think you are, when you find yourself in the hood, you're going to have to pray to God that you could be either good or get the hell out of it. Don't come to the hood if you think you're a badass, because we're going to make you look like a punk. So that was always very heartwarming to know that that puto went down and he got caught by the raza. Priceless. It's almost as good as Fernando Valenzuela back in the 80s at Chavez Ravine.
Fasten your seatbelt, everybody, because we're going to be embarking on this journey through a non-neon lit street of the 1980s where the secrets were hidden and justice was sought in the most enigmatic of times. Don't go anywhere. This is Back to the 80s Radio.
You're listening to Back to the 80s.
Back to the 80s Radio. That was Murder by Numbers by The Police, 1983. Oh, song of that dives into the psychology of murder, highlighting the allure of crime and its dark consequences. We are talking about crime and criminals of the 1980s. We talked about a couple already. If you've got a crime story from the 80s that you want us to talk about, hit us up here on our Facebook page and let us know. We'll be able to talk about it. Chang, I mean, that's crazy. We talked about the Night Stalker, and that was some serious psycho there.
Now, I'll bring up one real quick, and then we'll dive back into some of these psychotic murderers and stuff. I'm going to talk about a case that I don't know if you're familiar with. You might be. And I'm talking about one of Adam Walsh, the six-year-old boy who was abducted while he was shopping with his mom and his dad. And you know Mr. Walsh from his television show, America Most Wanted, and how right. He went on a crusade to try to put an end to child abduction or any yes. other cases that were open with heinous individuals out there. Now, Adam Walsh case, I remember this case breaking, and I remember it literally made me sick. I literally cried and vomited because I couldn't believe that a child was abducted. And then when the case finally carried on, to find out that what the individual did to that child and that child's last moments of life and the pain that child felt and the pain that his parents had to live through, or anyone that has ever gone through that. It was just gut-wrenching. I think that was probably one of the first stories that brought an enlightening to a lot of us, to where we have some sick fucks out there. You can bleep me out if you want. It doesn't really matter, but I'm not going to sugarcoat what I just said. I will say it again. We have a lot of sick fucks out there that feel powerful by taking an innocent child and having their way with, and then not only causing physical and mental damage to this child if the child lives and survives, but to take a child's life. I mean, where in society and where on God's map of life did this type of individual go wrong? Truly, Satan must be creating his own type of souls in his hellhole, or truly somebody up there misguard to let somebody like that walk the grass and the grounds of earth. And we still have individuals like that, and the numbers have gone up increasingly high. Nothing has stopped.
As a matter of fact, with this whole Israel-Palestinian Hamas invasion thing, look what the Hamas people did to all the children. I mean, yes. I've been seeing the pictures are the most horrific things you can imagine seeing. How can a human being, I mean, not even ISIS, not even Al-Qaeda would do what these people did to little babies, to tie them up, burn them alive, cut the hands, and behead them. Now, I'm being graphic, but you know, these people are animals, and I don't care what their reasoning is, you don't do that. You just don't do that. In this case, talking about the murder of Adam Walsh, I mean, you're talking about Otis Toole, who had confessed. So supposedly he had a deathbed confession, but then he recanted his confession. They stated that they found little Adam Walsh's head because he had been beheaded. He had been taken from a Sears department store. And the severed head was found in a drainage canal alongside the Florida Turnpike near Vero Beach, almost 130 miles away from Hollywood, Florida. So this guy was one sick, you know what, man. That's one of the things I remember as a child that would walk to school in the very early 80s. That was always in our mind because we would hear those reports a lot. There were a lot of children kidnappers, a lot of psychos that would take children and just abuse them and kill them. So that's one of the things that we did have definitely back in the 1980s.
I remember growing up, my parents always made us aware of knowing everywhere that you are, being familiar with your surroundings, paying attention to people. And my father always had taught me how to protect myself. And I remember my father always told me, if anyone touches or grabs you inappropriately, then you have to take the palm of your below the palm of your fit of the inside of your hand, and this one portion right here, and you just take that and you just cave in somebody's nose canal, and you're going to do two of one things. Either you're going to break their nose canal to where they can't breathe and they'll leave you alone, or if you do it hard enough, you can kill an individual.
So yeah, because it goes into the brain, yeah.
Right, so, you know, that was just food for thought, anybody out there. If you want to teach your kids something really quick, you know, you go over it a few times with them. I don't condone violence, but in this case, in this time in life, if anybody out there has a child that finds himself in a position of harm, go ahead and cave that motherfucker's face right in. And thank you for listening to Back to the 80s Radio.
We got to make a little disclaimer. We are not condoning violence here. Call the cops, but you know what to do. Anyway, 1981, there was an event called the Brinks robbery. Do you recall anything of the Brinks robbery?
Yeah, you know what? I think that was there was a couple of cases, I believe, in the 80s where some armored guards were robbed and murdered, correct? Continue with the story, my friend.
Three related murders that were committed on October 20th, 1981 by several of the Black Liberation Army members, which was interesting because the conspirators stole $1.6 million in cash from a Brinks armored car at the Nanuet National Bank in Nanuet, New York. They killed a Brinks guard, a guy named Peter Page, seriously wounding the Brinks, another Brinks guard, Joseph Trombino, and wounding another Brinks, the Brinks truck driver. And they finally got caught, but they had originally stolen $1.6 million, which is the equivalent to $5.2 million today.
Wow. It's always fascinating and sad to see the limit of stupidity one would do and the heinous things one would do for capital gain, for materialistic value, for money, the almighty dollar. And everybody knows the saying is not cliche. Money is the root of all evil. And I mean, man, what a job, bro. Would you willingly take a job as a Brinks driver, putting your life on the line for currency?
No way. Do you know how much they get paid? I'm not lying. Look it up. They don't even get paid $25 an hour. And I'm not lying. Look this up. Brinks, they start you off very low. And these are people that have to go to training. They have to get all kinds of permits. They have to carry a firearm. They have to buy a firearm. They have to get training they got to get training to use a firearm. They got to get training to use the handcuffs, the pepper spray, all this stuff in addition to their job. So, and for them to go, yeah, we're going to start you off at $22 an hour. And I'm risking my life and I'm spending all this money. You guys are nuts.
Now, I had a buddy, this kid I grew up, he was a co-worker's son of my dad, a good friend of my dad's also at that time. And this kid that I kind of grew up with, we're about the same age. His name was Ron Cardenas. He became a Brinks driver in Southern California. And I forget what year it was, but he was murdered as the truck was robbed. And he was killed execution style.
Right.
They put him on his knees, took his revolver, and they capped him in his head, in the back of his head.
Yeah, no, thank you.
So anybody that would do that job, our heart. Out to you. You guys are braver than hell. You got balls of steel, but also you're missing a couple of screws or nuts and bolts in there, because I would not put my life on the line or risk me not being around for my loved ones all for the sake of money.
From 1987, this is Michael Jackson with Smooth Criminal.
Hey, this is Laurie Miller from the first and original Exposé, and you're listening to Back to the 80s Radio. Hey,
Welcome back to Back to the 80s Radio with Toscano and Chang and everybody's king of pop, Michael Jackson. Oh, yeah, baby, with Smooth Criminal. Then we followed it up with Rockwell with Somebody's Watching Me. A song, ironically, has a little bit of MJ doing some background. And a song, I believe, Toscano, is kind of written about an icon such as MJ. Welcome back to the program. We are discussing criminals and crime of the 1980s. I've got a case here. We're going to take it back to a case that is very dear to my heart and probably a lot of individuals I would speculate that are similar. And I'm talking about the assassination of the legendary Beatle, John Lennon, back in 1980. How that kind of, I thought at that point, changed the manuscript about how America was supposed to conduct itself in the future from such an individual that was, he was just spreading unity and peace. He picked up the basket of unity and peace, from JFK and MLK. And when Lennon was killed, I remember hearing it on Monday Night Football by the late, great Howard Cosell.
Is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget, I ran to my mom, I was a little bit older, and I said, Mom, I'm afraid the world is not going to be the same again. I'm afraid that my future is going to be plagued by insanity, anger, hate, prejudice, and senseless murder. Now, I don't know if I was right. You can be the judge of that, or anybody listening right now to our words could be the judge if I was right. But that individual also was infatuated with none other, Jodie Foster. Yes, it's insane because Mark David Chapman actually got an autograph from John Lennon earlier that day, and there's a photo out there, and then he went in and killed him. Yeah, which is cowardless at the own right. You know, John Lennon to me really quick was a mentor, an inspiration. You know what? Everybody has a bad side. Yeah, he was a womanizer. Yeah, he did. He was a crazy partier. But man, who of us hasn't done anything bad but still believe in the golden rule of unity and compassion? That rocked my world. I think most of any death that I had any kind of feeling with in my younger days, John Lennon's death certainly is at the very high pinnacle mark of devastation for me, probably to a lot of others besides his own family.
Yeah, it's crazy to know that it did happen a long time ago, but at the same time, it's not that long ago. In the early 80s, when I used to hear about the Beatles, because I used to know that the Beatles were, basically a 60s band, I thought that John Lennon had died years and years before the 80s. But no, it happened in 81. So that's pretty crazy, especially to know that this guy had an autograph from John Lennon and he had the gall to assassinate him later on.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I see the hotline behind you. The red light's going on.
Somebody's calling. Somebody didn't... Hold on. Who's this?
Hello, Toscano. It's me, John. I'm calling you from heaven.
John? Is this John Lennon?
He was... Yes, it's me, John Lennon. That's right, everybody, the greatest Beatle of all time. I want to tell you all right now that Ringo was not the greatest drummer of all time, and the real Paul McCartney died. That's why we made your Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club album. But anyway, I heard my name brought up in today's show. I was on my way down to Earth with Elvis Presley and Stevie Ray Vaughan. We were going to go get some chicken and waffles. But anyway, yeah, that son of a bitch shot me in my back, and all I can say to him is, fuck you. Anyway, I got to be going. Yeah.
You know, John, John, don't go. Before you go, I just want to tell you, I mean, this is a really, really awesome thing that you're calling into the show, and you're calling in on our disconnected line, which makes it even more awesome. But
it's because it's straight from heaven.
That's right.
Know?
That's yeah. right. But did you know the guy who killed you? We won't even mention his name.
Well, that's why that crazy son of a bitch put a cap in my ass.
All right. Well, John. Well, you take it easy, and
hey, you take it easy too. And remember, go out and support your local record store, and remember the Beatles. We are the Fab Four forever. Bye bye.
John Lennon, ladies and gentlemen. John Lennon made his appearance. Wow. On April 20th, Chang, 1989, I got a famous case for you. A 28-year-old Trisha Mailey was found passed out in Central Park in New York. She'd been jogging in the park the night before when she was assaulted and severely beaten with a rock, putting her in a state of obviously lost consciousness for almost 2 weeks. The next day, the news story stated that a wolf pack of teenagers had targeted multiple people in that area that night of April 19th. Five teens were detained that night for what happened, and it ended Maylee's life. These boys were between the ages of 14 and 16. Now, the interesting thing is there's a lot of controversy in this story. They've made specials about it. There were really no eyewitnesses. There were really no DNA evidence that was presented in this Maylee's case. But despite nothing being found, they still found these young boys guilty and sent to jail for assault, sexual abuse, rape, robbery. And it's interesting because the five had served between 6 and 13 years when a new confession and new DNA evidence in the case was released in 2002. And it ends up being that a guy named Matias Reyes, a convicted murderer and rapist, confessed to targeting the young lady. The case was finally settled in 2014 for $41 million because of putting kids in jail that had nothing to do with it.
It's crazy that the 80s, I mean, the justice system was so far-fetched back in the 80s, and it still is. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to go on a record real quick. The justice system is worse today. You can go ahead pretty much and do whatever you want to any Tom, Dick, and Harry out there here in the States. And as long as you have a thing called revenue, cash, money, backing, you're going to pretty much get away with whatever crime you did. Talking O.J. Simpson. Did I say O.J. Simpson? Yeah, I did say O.J. Simpson. Did I say, oh, remember Robert Blake? Did I say Robert Blake? Yes, I did. Those just are a couple of cases that really bring a point to the asinine structure of our justice system, and that's all I'll say. Yeah, I know I'm going to get a lot of hate, Toscano, but you know me. I stand alone. I don't care if you hate me, because I believe I need to say what needs to be said, even though it's my own opinion.
Well, you know what? I think it's the way you're dressed today, which, and by the way, allow me to describe this to our fellow listener. So Chang usually comes dressed to the studio in his very, very interesting metal clothes, whether it be a leather jacket, whether it be spikes, whether it be a shirt with the name of a band from the 1980s, whatever it is. Today, ladies and gentlemen, he is literally Andy Warhol's brother, long lost brother.
Hi, everybody. My name is Emmanuel.
Emmanuel?
Have you ever sipped a Campbell's soup out of your lover's belly button?
No, we have not.
Oh, my brother used to like to draw pictures of bananas. It was a fondness of penis. We both love Jim Morrison standing naked in front of
us. Of course you did, Emmanuel. Anyway, thanks for being on the show with us.
I like to lick my lips like my
brother.
That's
disgusting.
Because it's like, I like to kiss myself.
Of course you like to kiss yourself. Anyway, all right. But yeah, you are dressed like that and Father Guido Sarducci today. So what is this? And look at this. You brushed your hair. It literally looks like you had a makeover at José Hébert's salon in Beverly Hills.
Well, actually, I've had to go see my buddy Rod before the show.
That's what happened.
I hadn't seen Rod in a while. And he was, as a matter of fact, he came down here to give my wife a perm.
Oh, okay.
And he said, oh, my God, Chang. That's exactly what he said, just like that. And he said that I looked like Sasquatch's ass after crapping in the wood without having any wet ones. That was his little. And to put it the way he said it is, oh, my God, you look like Sasquatch's ass. And it looks like you haven't had a wet one wiping your cheeky chews.
Of course.
In over a week. And that was exactly what Rod said. And I said, well, you know what, Rod, do something for me. Because we're doing a big show tonight. We're talking about crime. And he said, oh, somebody put me in cuffs, spank me, and give me a stick of beating. And I want the meat stick. And that's what he said. And I was like, holy shit. And anyway, I thought, you know what? I might as well get my my trusty rifle shooting apparel off.
Right. Oh.
Because I know you and the Toscano boys have your own.
Oh, we do.
But probably with shotgun shells hanging out of the little pocket that I'm not going to show what's in my little pocket.
No, please don't.
Right here with my black. No.
No.
No, please no. I can get arrested. No.
You know what? You remind me.
I can get arrested.
You remind me of somebody.
I need a razor blade and a straw.
You remind me of somebody who's going to go have a wine tasting by the beach and at an art gallery. You know what? I need to see you dressed like this more often. It's quite the change. It's very nice. Very nice to see you like this. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back here, back to the 80s radio. Don't go away.
Minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 4.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
MTV has been heralded as fresh and innovative and criticized for being shallow.
When MTV first hit, this was the biggest talk in the universe.
MTV dropped a grenade into our world.
Everybody was watching MTV.
People had it on like the radio.
I want my MTV!
Made international stars almost overnight.
We had no idea what was going to happen because of MTV.
It gave a visual representation to the artist that they did not have before.
But you never looked at music the same way again.
Welcome back to the 80s radio with Toscano and Chang, and that was In Excess with The Devil Inside, because every single one of us has got the devil inside. Man, Michael Hutchence, what a sexy mother. Good Lord, if I could look like Michael Hutchence for one evening, easily, I would probably have sex with myself. Hey, Toscano, you know what? I just noticed as we were on break, for some reason, the Magic Phone is going off the charts. The red light right behind you. You know what? Toscano, why don't you mix us a couple of drinks? I'll cue up some music for the next break, and I'm going to get the phone call while you're in the kitchenette.
All right, I'll be right back. I got to get us some drinks.
Yeah, you called Back to the 80s Radio. This is Chang here. Toscano is making ourselves some ice beverages because we are celebrating a crime prevention type show. Who am I talking to? Holy shit! Elmo! Everybody's naughty little Muppet with a hole in his ass like a puppet. Now, Elmo, what?
Hi, Chang.
Oh, hi.
Are you 16?
Oh, Elmo, I am more than 16. Elmo, what brings you to the show, buddy?
Hi, Chang. I know you're talking about crime, and I have the perfect crime. Many years ago, there was a big, bad man who did very naughty things to Elmo.
What did he do?
I gotta tell you, Chang, they violated my contract. The man told me he was gonna pay me a certain amount of money so I could do a children's show, and he never paid me. I was violated. And he didn't even take me to dinner.
Elmo!
Yeah?
That is terrible.
Hey, Chang, you look 16. Can I sit in your lap?
No.
Okay, Elmo's gotta go. La 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 la, la 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 la, la la la.
Ouch. You remember the first time you tried these games? Space Cadet. But with practice.
Captain Galaxy! And when you first tried Coke, I bet you said, no, thank you. But hey, hey, hey! Let's try Coke again. Because once you got that new wave taste, you want to try it again, again, and again. Practice makes perfect. Catch the wave, the Coke.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Shadow Stevens, and you must listen to Back to the 80s Radio. It's the law.
Today, we are talking about crime. Crime in the 1980s, criminals in the 1980s, etc. Well, Chang, I've got one for you. In 1986, this also happened in New York. New York City was actually shocked by this. They even call it the Preppy Murder Case. There's a guy named Robert Chambers who was charged with the murder of Jennifer Levin. And the event took place during a romantic encounter, again, in Central Park. And this drew incredible amount of media attention because of the intriguing mix of privilege, youth, and the shocking crime scene that it was. I mean, this was a big, big deal back in 1986. It was called the Preppy Murder. Now, he was convicted of killing a young lady, 18 years old. She was Jennifer Levin. Now, he was originally charged with second-degree murder, but supposedly, this guy claims that it was an accident that resulted in him pushing her off when she caused him some pain as she sexually assaulted him. How do you like that? Of course, it was the other way around. Media accounts, this whole story was around, it delved around rough sex. When in reality, the guy just abused her. This guy was from a prestigious prep school, New York Prep, on the Upper East Side. The guy had scholarships, assisted. I mean, he lived a luxurious life. He had the lifestyles where he socialized with his peers, and just like in the movies. I mean, this guy, his father was a videocassette distributor. His mother worked as a private nurse, once treating a young John F. Kennedy for bronchitis. He was accepted at Boston University. He was asked to leave after one semester for reasons that they say that he had stolen a credit card. And so he had some petty thefts here and there. Ended up that he took the life of Jennifer Levin. This was a very, very big case, and they called it the Preppy Murder.
That is in the forefront of some of the big crimes in this decade. So I'm going to bring it out real quick. Your thoughts on Jeffrey Dahmer?
Ah, yes. How can we forget Jeffrey Dahmer? He was also known as the Milwaukee Cannibal or the Milwaukee Monster. What can we say about Jeffrey Dahmer? What a guy, right? Sex offender, was a serial killer. He
dismembered 17
males,
young men.
Yes.
17.
Yep. Many of his later murders involved necrophilia cannibalism. Now, for those of you who don't know, necrophilia is the act of having a sexual or committing a sexual act with a corpse. In addition to that, it was necrophilia and cannibalism. So this guy, this monster, this guy was gone. Literally, in his mind, this psychopath was done. He was a guy with psychotic disorder of the ultimate degree. I mean, he was sentenced to 15 terms of life. He was eventually beaten to death by Christopher Scarver, a fellow inmate at the Columbia Correctional Institution in Wisconsin.
Yeah, he said God told him to do it.
Yeah, in 1984, November 28th.
His dimension of psychoticness came from an individual who didn't get the proper interaction with his father. His father taught him a lot of hunting skills and cleaning the hunt down for suitable to eat. You know what? His mom left him at a very young age, took off, took the other siblings, left him there. His dad left him in the house that he was growing up. He didn't have a lot of love, a lot of affection. He felt unwanted. He felt a little bit, you know, he didn't have a lot of self, what word am I looking for? Self-importance.
He had low self-esteem
as
well.
So this was a guy, very low self-esteem. You know, he battled with being a homosexual. He was rejected. You know, and there's a lot of individuals, brother, that fall into the category of individuals like that. But, you know, I'm not making any type of an excuse for what he did. But when we see certain cases on certain murderers and individuals that go out and do such heinous crimes, we cannot be so self-absorbent in our own hate and pretend that we are God or the justice system and persecute them just for their acts alone. I think we need to understand why an individual does what they do, and maybe try to keep it from happening by treating the base of individuals that may fall off the deep end to do such heinous crimes.
I mean, I agree, but I also don't agree with to a certain extent, because look, we've had years as a society, years and years and years and years of studying killers and psychopaths and people with schizophrenia, etc. And there is still no end in sight to those illnesses. And they keep coming, and it seems like everything gets even worse. This is a guy, Dahmer, who had just turned 18. He had barely gone out. I mean, he had barely been out like 3 weeks out of high school. He picks up a hitchhiker, takes him to his house, promising some beer, and hits him on the head with a 10-pound dumbbell. Now, I'm going to be a little graphic here, but this is an 80s show, right? He strips the clothes from Hicks's body before exploring his chest with his hands, then masturbating as he stood above the corpse. Hours later, Dahmer dragged the body to the basement. The following day, Dahmer dissected Hicks' body in his basement. He buried the remains in a shallow grave in his backyard. Then later, he unearthed the remains and took the flesh from the bones. He dissolved the flesh, and this is extremely gross. He dissolved the flesh in acid, and he crushed the bones with a sledgehammer, scattering them in the woodland behind the family home. Hicks' necklace and knife used to dismember him were thrown into off a bridge. So this guy, Dahmer, was nuts. And it's scary, man, because he was fresh out of high school. And if we come to think about it, how many kids today are going through mentally what Dahmer did? Dahmer wasn't the only one.
No, that's why I thought I would bring up that quick point. Yeah, and that's a good point that you brought up real quick. We see that a lot nowadays, bro. Bullying, cyberbullying. so many kids, bro, because of the ways of society where we have a bunch of weirdo and sick ass fools out there, pedophiles running around. We have a lot of parents that have to both work, or maybe both parents just don't pay attention to the kid, to where we leave these children alone at the mercy of bullies, cyberbullying, or pedophiles, or growing up with some of the same mental damage as Dahmer did. Who's to say that there's another individual just waiting to come out and go against society and pose their own devastating acts of heinousness on society for reasons that they feel that they've been shortchanged? I mean, it's a scenario that plays out continuously, not as heavy as we've seen with Dahmer or anybody like a Richard Ramirez, who has not had the love and the care that a kid could get or should get, that turn them out to be such devastatingly mean ass sickos like we've seen and like we're discussing now. So who's to say, my brother, but it's an epidemic that is on the rise. I guarantee an individual like Dahmer or Ramirez or anybody else that has committed such crimes, it could happen again, bro. I'm just saying, it could happen again.
Yeah, and we got to be careful when we get somebody knocking on our door. On that note, let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll say our final goodbyes here, Back to the 80s Radio. All right, Back to the 80s Radio. You just heard Men at Work, and that was Who Can It Be Now? Who can it be? Be careful, you know?
Who can it be now? You know what? And that is a great song to play, especially as we talk about criminals or sneaky things, because Colin's eye was pretty sneaky. You never knew what the guy was looking at when he was singing Who Could It Be Now, because he didn't know what he was looking at.
That's right. I want to thank you guys for taking your time to listen to Back to the 80s Radio Show as we talked today about crime, criminals back in the 80s. We want you to stick around here. Come back to see us next week as we continue the journey of bringing the 80s to a whole new generation. On my behalf, Toscano, just want to say have a great week. Say a good prayer for everybody involved in those heinous actions that are going on around the world, and be one to make a difference. Don't be one to be the problem. Take care.
This is Chang. Before I release you to another Changtastic weekend, one more crime of the century, and that would be the crime in sports. Anytime the Boston Celtics beat my Los Angeles Lakers of Showtime basketball during the 80s was a crime. I remember all of you, go out there and be something Changtastic. Go out there and stand for something bigger than yourself. Stand for somebody that can't or won't stand for themselves. Keep that smile going, and remember, you matter. Don't let nothing get you down. And until next week, I bid you all a sayonara. Hasta la vista, hasta luego. Aloha. And to all my homies and everybody across this land, orderly.